We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, Tan Trung joins us, WWL multimedia journalist. Easter, obviously, this Sunday, and no better timing to talk about candy than today. Right, Tan?
Oh, you got it. You got it. And, you know, it might be too early to eat, but I think that that's going to change in the next couple of days.
No doubt about it. So you visit with the Elmer's Candy Company, Chocolate Candy Company folks, and some really, really interesting details about Easter and why it's kind of different than all other holidays relative to chocolate candy.
Yeah, and, you know, with the podcast, with the Town Report, I try to find topical and kind of timely subjects, and it's hard to kind of figure out Easter because not everybody celebrates Easter, and you get into these religious kind of conflicts when it comes to who worships whom, but I thought that everybody could kind of settle and agree on that we eat candy during Easter. And I thought that taking a look at some of the traditions that are particular to this area, the Gulf South, New Orleans, and Louisiana, would be an interesting topic. And I didn't grow up here, and I think sometimes I catch flack for that, but I grew up eating a different brand of Easter candy, different types of Easter candy, but I didn't know how beloved and how treasured Heavenly Hash, Gold Brick Eggs, and the Pecan Egg are. And those are some of the products that the Elmer Candy Corporation has been making going back to the 1920s and 1930s. And it's lasted till today. And the podcast is really taking a look at how regional our Easter candy consumption is. And to me, at least, it's a fascinating look at, you know, what we do in certain regions when it comes to certain times of the year.
Rob Nelson, who is the CEO, is a representative of the family that owns Elmer's Candy Company at the present time. Actually, he's a former neighbor of mine. I think he just moved to the North Shore about a year or so ago. Great family, always been very active in New Orleans and the New Orleans metro area. But they find themselves in Ponchatoula now, over across the lake, right?
Yeah, they've been in there in Tangipahoa Parish in Ponchatoula, which obviously many of us know as the berry town, home of the Strawberry Festival. But they've been based in Ponchatoula since 1970. And as Rob described it to me, he said that, you know, that was sort of right around the time that the national retailers took advantage of refrigeration, mass refrigeration, and the ability to move things across interstate lines and state lines. Because of refrigeration trucks and so on and so forth. And that allowed them to take their headquarters out of New Orleans. They were based in New Orleans since 1855 in the warehouse district and moved their headquarters into Ponchatoula, which is where they are today. And the reason that they chose that area is that it's in this nice kind of intersection of I-55 and I-10. You can move things easily along the Gulf South as well from there. And you know, it's also a really kind of great town just to be based in. It's small, and they're getting a good workforce there. But, you know, when you mentioned that you had Rob Nelson as a neighbor, I'm curious, I'm probably imagining that he never had a lack of sugar if you ever needed some sugar, Newell.
Yeah, I can't imagine that we did. I never had the guts to go ask him for candy, though.
Come on. He's the CEO of a candy corporation.
I know. I missed a golden opportunity there for sure. Interestingly, there's so many details about this, as you mentioned earlier, that Elmer's actually goes back to the 1800s. One of the older manufacturers of confectionery and chocolate candies and the like, and a very interesting history as it went from owner to owner and certain challenges that they faced over the years, bringing it to where we are today, where they say they are the most advanced technologically and the most automated chocolate manufacturer in the country.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool assignment for me. And I often kind of kick myself thinking, it's like, how did I get into this situation in the most positive way? But I found myself very much in Elmer's chocolate factory. And I say at the head of the podcast that if there was ever a time that I could say that I was like a kid in a candy store, that was it. I was physically in this place that was creating, I mean, there was chocolate and candy everywhere. But, you know, it went from this very historical 1855-based company based in New Orleans to now in Ponchatoula. And if you think of Ponchatoula, you don't necessarily think of state-of-the-art technology. But at least within the confines of the Elmer Candy Corporation, they went to a full automation system several years back, probably during their expansion in 2015 and 2016. It was a $45 million expansion of their facility in Ponchatoula. And what they did is, it's right now it's all automated. And that can sound like an evil term, because in this day and age, when you hear of automation, you think of job killers for humans, for people. But that's not necessarily the case for the Elmer Candy Corporation, since they've gone to all these robotic arms and these automated assembly conveyor lines as well. They've increased their output. And as Rob Nelson was describing it to me, because they have so much more output, they need more humans to match that output. Instead of just doing the quantity kind of focused jobs in terms of just creating the chocolate and then packaging it, that's now put to the robots and the automation. The people now are in more qualitative roles and checking quality of chocolates, making sure that the computers and the machinery is online. And because they run so many more shifts than they used to, because they can basically run many more hours, they need more humans. So it's this weird anomaly where automation has actually increased jobs and increased payroll at a particular company. Obviously, that's not the case for every sector of the economy, but in this particular case, it is. And I find that fascinating.
Absolutely. And just for our folks to put this in context, their production line is 130 yards long, and they're actually able to package 4,000 pieces of chocolate a minute. That's insane.
Oh, it is. It is. And, you know, I don't know the specific, schematics for that. And that was just one particular line. That particular line that Rob was describing, when you talk about the 130 yards, that was just one particular room. It's cavernous when I went through there. And, you know, there's a whole set of protocols that you have to go through, because you're dealing with a food. You're dealing with something that people are consuming. So I had to go through a sanitizing kind of process. And I look very great in a smock and a hairnet, and I'm going to keep sporting that outside of the factory. But, you know, they have to be concerned about those issues, because you're putting out a product that potentially millions of people will be consuming. And, you know, in this day and age, peanut allergies and nut allergies have to be concerned about, you know, the cleanliness and the quality of their food. But it's hard to describe. I posted a couple of videos on my social media of what just one section of the assembly line looks like. But, you know, it is full automation. There is this candy everywhere, which can be quite fun to think about. But it's really a technological feat, and how they've been able to streamline that and then meld it with what they're doing on the human side is pretty wild to me. And at the end of the day, you know, it's what they're doing is just pumping out these candies that we're consuming. And you know, right now, what they're doing with that is really a model for potentially other places to kind of go after. But when it comes to, particularly because we're talking about Easter candy, none of that's really part of the equation, which is also fascinating to me.
Yeah, so let's go there real quick. Everything that we just said, folks, is how they produce their candy day in and day out, their Christmas candy, Valentine's Day candy. All of that goes out of the window when it comes to Easter candy, which just completely blew me away when we said that. And it really moves, as he said, more from science back to art when they do their Easter candy. Why is that?
Well, because some of the production of what we see every year on the shelves here, you know, you're talking about Heavenly Hash, the Gold Brick Egg, the Pecan Egg, they have to basically put some of those elements, the chocolate and certainly the nuts, inside by hand. And that's how they used to do it. So it's still, they're still using machines, they're using conveyor lines and so on and so forth. But you're going to have people physically putting nuts and chocolate, and then you're going to deal with some of the marshmallows that need human handling as well. So the automation goes away because the Easter candy is highly specialized, and it's only for a particular window of time. So it's only a 6 to 8 week window that they're producing Easter candy, because they have to do it early enough to make sure that the stores have it in time for our sales and, you know, our shopping experiences in Walmart or CVS or wherever you get your candy at the Rouse's. They have to do that ahead of time. But that particular process to make the pecan egg, the gold brick egg, and the heavenly hash, it's something that you can't teach a machine to do because it's highly specialized. So as Rob described it to me, you're going to see people during that time with a lot of sugar, a lot of starch on their shirts. It's not, you know, and I'll say this, is that their facility is hyper clean. It's uber clean. But he said that kind of goes away, and there's going to be more stuff on people and the floor because, you know, that's how the human process is. But that's only just for the Easter candy, and I think that's what makes it so special for people here.
Now, interestingly, about Easter as well, it's more regional, right? There's a lot of nuances and customs as it relates to the Easter celebration, and therefore folks gravitate to the more regional candy maker. And obviously Elmer, as Mr. Nelson says, I think is kind of the Gulf South from Houston to Pensacola up through the I-20.
Yeah, and I was trying to be a wise ass when I asked him, why is that your market? Is everybody else north of I-20 and north of I-10 heathens? And he said it really goes back to the history of the Candy Corporation itself. And he said that back in the day, there was only a handful of what he called general line candy companies, and Elmer was the one for the Gulf South. So you had the Elmer company here, and if you think about the Hershey company in Pennsylvania, they had their kind of market within the Northeast. That's where I grew up, and I grew up eating a lot of Hershey products. But down here along the Gulf South, it was Elmer territory. So what they did was during Easter, they would produce these highly specialized candies, the ones that we know now, the Heavenly Hash, the Gold Brick Egg, and the Pecan Egg. And that just kind of seeps through years and years of tradition, because as Rob was describing to me, he said that Louisiana is one of these rare places that most people who are born here, or most people who have lived here, were born here and they stay here. So if you grew up just eating Heavenly Hash and Gold Brick Egg and Pecan Eggs, that's what you're going to eat every Easter. And, you know, it was a new phenomenon to me when I came to the New Orleans area back in the early 2000s. You know, I was like, what is this gold brick egg? Because I grew up eating Cadbury cream eggs and the hard-shelled Hershey cream eggs. And it was a new phenomenon. But it speaks to the regionality of how we celebrate certain holidays and certainly the stuff that we eat. You know, obviously crawfish and beignets are something that we eat down here. And apparently that's the same thing that applies for us when we're talking about Easter candy.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how a lot of things change, but the Meltaway Center in the Gold Brick, which was established in 1936, is still the same. And with little changes, very minor changes, Heavenly Hash, which was developed in 1923, still the same. When you think about it, it's crazy.
It's still the same. And as Rob would say and told me, you know, that, again, they have to be careful about putting nuts and peanuts and certain chocolates in there, what he calls their mainline chocolates. But the Heavenly Hash and the other Easter candy, those are made back in the day before we had people complaining and you know, getting up in arms about having peanuts and nuts in their chocolate. That's the way it always has been. And he said that if we changed that formula, he said there would be torches and pitchforks outside of the company telling them to please put the almonds and the nuts back in and the pecans in, because that's the way it's always been. But, you know, just as an example, though, I mean, I posted the podcast online today to my social media feed. And, you know, I had people saying, well, when are they going to bring back the malt version of this? And you know, what about the full egg version of the gold brick egg and so on and so forth? So people's history goes back so far with this. And, you know, they very much have this close to their heart when it comes to Elmer candy.
No doubt. In fact, I'm getting texts now and got a text here that says, don't forget about those awesome Chewies from Elmer's. It's not Easter candy, but it's Chewies. I guess that was a precursor to Cheetos. And obviously, a lot of folks love those as well.
Yeah, as Rob described it, the Elmer Corporation used to be one company, and they also produced Chewies, which was, as you mentioned, the precursor to Cheetos. But that broke apart when, you know, the Nelson family came in, they bought them out, and the company, and Chewies is still produced by Elmer Fine Foods in New Orleans, but that's a separate company now. But again, you mentioned the Elmer company, and people have all these nostalgic memories of, you know, what they ate, whether it was Chewies or candies and Easter candy. And I think that's the beautiful thing of living here, is that these traditions hold up, even though we have so many changes going around us.
The one little thing was interesting, too, is that his employees, when they're walking around in Ponchatoula, they're wearing T-shirts that say that they know the Easter Bunny. I got a big kick out of that. You know? And I guess everyone associates those folks that they work at Elmer's, obviously.
Yeah, and they break those out, and they do something special each year to kind of signify the time that they're going into Easter mode. And, you know, this particular year they handed out and they gave the employees a T-shirt saying, I know the Easter Bunny, just to kind of say, you know, we're in this time to make these candies that people love. It's only a certain window of time. And, you know, I would say that if you see somebody with a T-shirt saying, I know the Easter Bunny, be a friend to them, because that's somebody you should know. And that's in a pinch, if you need some chocolate, maybe they can help you out.
Absolutely. And we just touched on a few details that are provided in this incredible story. There's another story. I'm not going to say it, but you really want to hear it because it's a lot. It has to do with Hershey and Elmer. And it's really funny to think about and just how much that we've embraced this company over the years. And everybody's totally aware of it. So where can we find the podcast, Tom?
They can find the Tahn Report, so that's THANH. Just punch that into wherever you get your podcast, and that's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. It's also on the Odyssey app, and you can also find the Tahn Report right on the website of WWL Radio. We got the link right on the radio website right now.
Another great job and another great story. I just love these stories. They're just so interesting. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Newell. Happy Easter, my friend.
Same to you, my friend. Tahn Truong, WWL multimedia journalist. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we return, we'll be talking to Andrew Wilson, owner of the cigar bar Cuban Creations. Stay with us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.